How are y'all doing?
Doing good.
Good, man. Surviving.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's been just really strange times. So both of y'all are located in Austin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Houston right now, so we've been bouncing back and forth between New Orleans and Houston. I'm from Houston originally, and New Orleans got totally shut down, and then we got shut down in Houston, and so it's been an experience, to say the least.
Yeah. Austin's about the same. I don't know. It's starting to kind of pick back up just like a little bit, but I mean, for us, like, it really hasn't changed. Like, it hasn't changed our lives so much because I'm at the wood shop now, and so it's like, you know, just show up to the shop and then go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that's changed for me, so we both work in industries that we're working since this started. I work in for a health food co-op grocery store, and Dylan works at a hospital. So,
oh wow!
So we both have just been working. Luckily I'm in IT, so I've worked mostly remotely, but I have to pop in quite a bit to stuff, you know, fix stuff or whatever. But yeah, and then it's just been that and the wood shop. So it's just really focused our energy more on work and just less messing around. The biggest impact that it's had on us is that we had quite a few shows that we were supposed to be doing backlines for, beginning with South By, and then it would have been, I guess, this coming weekend would have been Northwest Fest.
Yeah, it would have been Northwest Terror Fest.
Yeah.
Then Austin Terror Fest. And then it would have been Monolith on the Mesa at the same time, right?
Yep. Yeah, this weekend would have been Monolith on the Mesa and Northwest Terror Fest. And so our friends, Bridge Farmers, were scheduled to play Monolith, and they were going to take our backline that lives here in Austin up to that festival for the second year in a row. And then Northwest Terror Fest has their own backline that lives up there. That's Worshipper Calves. And they always fly us out to do stage management up there. So yeah, we would have been in Seattle this coming weekend, and our friends would have been in Taos, and then we would have come right back to do Oblivion Access, which was the former Austin Terror Fest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not too dissimilar of a deal on my end. I'm the photographic and media manager for the University of Houston downtown.
And, okay.
So I've been working freelance for years, and then this gig came along, and it became one of those deals to where it's like, well, it'll keep me in town a little bit longer. I'll be able to be with my girl more and all that. And then,
yeah.
And then, and then this hit, and I'm just like, good Lord. Like, I'm just thankful that I got something going on. I've had to go down also, you know, and shoot a few things and stuff, but it hadn't been crazy. It's been busy at home. And then also me working with Metalloid and all that. And I had a ton of shows I was going to cover, this spring, you know, and everything got annihilated this spring and summer, and then stuff's getting pushed in the fall already, and you know, people are talking 2021 and all that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I just obviously it's the venues, you know. I heard that Three Kings in Denver shut down, and now's a really cool place, and I mean, I've heard of a few others, you know, that I can't think of off the top of my head, but that's the scary part,
you know,
is actually shutting down, you know?
Yeah. I heard the Lizard Lounge shut down in Dallas, and Warehouse Live in Houston is really struggling in particular. I know all the venues are struggling. Everyone's trying to be creative, you know, and they were doing a couple of things for at least the bartenders and stuff, to where they were having these like one night stand takeovers at other restaurants and stuff, and creating things like that. And I know there are a few like grants and some funding for performing artists and stuff in Houston, and people are trying, you know, and that's at least saying something. I mean it's been bizarre for all of us. It sucks.
Yeah, I saw that there is a new, I can't remember what it's called. It's that kind of new national association for independent venues.
Yeah.
I can't remember that.
I can't either. I've seen it float around though.
It's been getting passed around a bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be a really, really cool thing that, you know, ends up sticking around for a long time, being a lobbying force or whatever else to help with stuff.
Yeah. Well, to transition a little bit from the heavy stuff, let's talk about some fun stuff and some cool stuff.
Yeah. I'm into that. We already bummed it out.
Yeah. Oh, that was a big womp womp moment. Well, you know, I mean, the thing is that we are all trying and doing, you know, what we can to keep moving forward with stuff. And that's one of the reasons why we started doing these videos and podcasts, and then rolling it into an article as well that goes on the website and stuff. And so we're not only covering bands, we're trying to cover support for bands and audio engineers. And, you know, and then like I'm talking to a few tattoo artists that are huge into heavy metal and stuff. And so we're trying to just cover a big spectrum of people that are not only affected, but are still moving forward, you know? And that's another thing too, that I've really noticed, is that it's like, everyone's trying, you know, and that's saying something a lot. And I'm seeing that globally, which is really cool. I've been really fortunate and been able to talk to a lot of people all over the place. And it's cool too, to talk to a couple of guys that are in my backyard as well. So,
Yeah.
About some dope cabinets. Actually, I interviewed just the other day, Duel. So I hear I hear y'all dip into a little more than just cabinets, but don't promote it that much.
I started the drone thing. Was kind of a weird endeavor. I'm actually making a couple like right now, but that was just kind of the thing that I just wanted to try to do, and it's come out pretty good. And I gave Justin one of those snares.
Yeah.
And apparently he loves it, which is awesome.
Yeah, no, he does love it. He says it's heavy as hell, but he loves it. Well, so how'd y'all get started with building speaker cabinets and then rolling into drums and stuff?
Well, honestly, Dylan and I know each other from New Mexico. We're both from Las Cruces, and both played music down there, and had shows at our houses. Just came up in like DIY punk metal scene. And I moved here about 9, and then moved here, I guess, 6-7 years ago.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, we reconnected when he moved back here, or when he moved here, and we were out hanging out, went to a show. I believe it was this band Tobacco, this weirdo synth guy. Same guy that does Black Moth Super Rainbow, but we went to go see him. It was a free show, right? Like a Red Bull sponsored show just during the week, at Mobile.
Yeah.
And, we were talking and I was already playing music. I had a band that moved here, like the guitar player and I moved here at the same time. So we got a new drummer and we're continuing with that band here. And Dylan asked me, he goes, you know, what would be your dream set, you know, like rig wise? I was like, man, I would do a 415 and a 612, and I'd have these amps, and, you know, I just kind of rattle off some stuff. He goes, you know, I'm thinking of building some cabs. You know, I've been kind of doing some research. I was like, all right, yeah. He goes, if I built 415, would you play it? You look at the speakers and play it. I was like, yeah, of course. And I'm thinking, whatever. I've known Dylan for a long time, but, you know, a lot of people talk shit. You know, they just go, oh, what a cool this. And you're like, okay, whatever. Well, 2 days later, this guy sends me a picture, you know, got the wood, like, getting started on. I was like, oh, serious. Like, he's not messing around. Like, okay, so I sold some gear. I get some speakers to load it up. And I don't know, a month or two later, I go to his house and plug into it and start messing with it. And start playing it out for shows. And everybody was like, where the fuck did you get that thing? And I said, hey, my buddy Dylan built it for me. Man, do you think he would have, I don't know, ask him. And so that's kind of how it started, is people just started hitting him up going, hey, would you build this thing? Would you build that thing for me? And next thing we know, Dylan's like, dude, I need help, like, building stuff. It's kind of your fault. You know, I was like, well, you know, I don't know if it's my fault, but, you know, I think I'll definitely come over and help you. So we started building in the back of his yard, just outside, you know, mosquito bites, sweating our ass off, you know, very
mosquito bites. Fuck.
Yeah. Rudimentary tools. And from there, we moved it to my garage and the house that I was living at the time, and then moved to a different shop. Some weird stuff happened there. It was a place we rented from a guy. We had out of there, like, soon after we moved in. Luckily, there was a wood shop a couple doors down. We meet this other guy. We move to his wood shop. We share his space. And then now we're located where Dylan is, at a place called Mosaic Sound Collective here on the east side of Austin.
Very cool. Well, I love it when grassroots stuff picks up like that. You know, I mean, that's how a lot of really cool things happen. So many things come out of garages. What's that? Oh, I lost him.
Yeah, man, this thing kind of started with, like, it's basically like a hobby that just kind of really got out of hand really, really fast. And then, like, the drum thing happened, and then we were like, man, it'd be kind of cool to, like, see if we could make a drum. And, like, we looked at everything that went into it. And even when I was looking at making cabinets, there was, like, I was just kind of looking at speakers and, like what kind of speakers went into a cabinet and, like, how it affected sound and all this other stuff. And then, like, all this weird, just kind of, like, all these weird kind of coincidences, like, started coming out where, like, we got a hold of Weber speakers, and, like, those guys were really, really cool, and they started, like, hooking us up, like, giving us a lot of recommendations, and just basically moving forward along those lines. And people, and basically, like, trying to do, like, weird concepts, like 415s, 612s, reverse 118s, Leslie cabs, you know, all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah. Well, and that's some of the stuff that got me turned on to y'all, is because I've been, you know, I play guitar, and I'm huge into fuzz, and I'm huge into giant sounds, and Motorhead is my band. and just like a lot of other people out there too. So I'm not staking claim. I'm just saying.
Oh yeah.
And no. And Lemmy's out there with his Rickenbacker, and he's got a 412 and a 415, you know, and right. And like I said, I'm a guitar player, but that sound. I mean, you can't deny that sound and that sonic wave that you feel. You know, I'm a huge High on Fire fan, and I love Matt Pike, and a big Sleep fan as well. You know, and you know, and it's like when he has just a wall of Orange Cabinets. I mean, it's like you can't deny it. You feel the music when you're there live. And that's a big thing of mine. And like right when you were talking about, you know, where it's like, well, what's my perfect setup? And right off the bat, you're like, well, 415 and then like a 612. And I'm just like, oh man, yeah, that would sound amazing. You know?
Oh yeah. No, I play a Rickenbacker. I'm a huge Motorhead Lemmy fan. So yeah, that's where a lot of it started for me. A lot of, you know, the loud stuff.
Yeah.
Really, like, you know, High on Fire, Motorhead. I was telling Colby, a friend of ours who's been helping out with the drums, yesterday. I was like, man, I got to see High on Fire around Surrounded by Thieves when that came out in Long Beach at Alex's Bar, and when Joe Preston had just joined the band, and it was just like, man, you know, hearing his like guitar, it was like, whoa, he's playing it. That's a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, not sound checking a bass, you know, and then the bass, like, oh, shit. Okay. You know? So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, the realm that we come from as well.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. Well, I'm personally familiar with Weber and have looked into them as well. Let's touch on them for a second since they're a part of your, you know, I don't want to say team, but they're one of your suppliers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, like CJ Sutton, who's awesome. He's been with them a long time. And then Neil, who was previously with them, like you just kind of started emailing and, I mean, they're great. They kind of got into this whole, like, they have the Tone Cult series now where you can get custom voice coils. And so, like, I mean, back before, like, you had to get, you had to mismatch, like, speakers for, like, you had to get, you know, 4 16s and 2 8s because people couldn't, you know, and you couldn't get everything the same load to get to get an even impedance throughout everything. So Weber started doing 12 ohm and 24 ohm coils so we could do weirder stuff like 6 12s.
Very cool.
And then get an even load so you could run all of them. And they even do that for 15s, which, you know, 6 15 in theory sounds good, but I don't want to make it.
So. I don't want to carry it. I was just thinking that.
I was just thinking that. Just trying to carry one where it's like maybe if it was like 3 compartments that you put together, but it's not going to sound the same.
Yeah, Weber has just been, like Dylan had said, they were easily like the first very supportive company just right out the gate. Not only in terms of, hey, we'll give you speakers at wholesale, price, but also just if you have questions, reach out.
Yeah,
we'll be super honest. You know, like they've, and then as builders, you know, or if you have customers that are looking for a certain sound, have them reach out to us. They spend a lot of time kind of one-on-one with customers, whether it's cab builders like ourselves or just you know, guitar players or bass players going, I like, this is my favorite sound that I've had, or this is something that I'm used to, but I'm looking for something different. They're very good at guiding folks and also very honest too, because there's times where I remember when we first met Neil, who was working with Weber, he came down for South By and we spent a lot of time talking shop and nerding out over gear and having a fun time, but also I was running stuff past them and I was like, all right, I'm getting into synthesizers and getting into stuff that's going to get super, super low. And he's like, you know, honestly, handmade speakers aren't necessarily going to be your best bet for that kind of stuff. Just might actually do better with this company or whatever else, you know. So that kind of transparency and willing to just be upfront and honest about the stuff just makes that company really, really cool. The fact that it's a small, family-owned, American company here from the Midwest, that's just really, really awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's very cool. Well, so you know, I'm personally in the know, but for people that would be seeing this and that aren't familiar with Worship cabinets, do y'all supply not only custom cabinets, but do you supply cabinets that aren't filled yet, and do you supply cabinets with other speakers? Are you exclusively going with Weber right now?
No, we're basically like whatever you want. We're fully custom. So, I mean, we're just trying to get people like kind of like what they want. Like how we kind of got into this is like a Line 6 and an Orange and like a Marshall. These all have vintage 30s in them. Celestion Vintage 30s. It's yeah. Kind of like your go-to stock, whatever. And basically what we wanted to do, like, we'll do unloaded, loaded, like, we're just trying to keep this aesthetic of, we want you to sound like you. Like, we want you to sound, like, if you're trying to do something super, super different, or if you want, you know, it's like, I've always wanted this sound to work better at these particular frequencies, or I've never been able to get my sound to do this with my amp. Like, we're just trying to accommodate that musician, that band, whoever, to get like to kind of cut through like what they're doing at the best they can.
Very cool. Yeah, no, that's awesome. And not many people can say that about much anything that they provide.
Yeah,
I mean, we.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna echo what Dylan was saying. Yeah, we've sold empty cabs to folks to wire up themselves or other brands of speakers. We definitely encourage Weber just because we've had the most support from them. We have the most experience with them. We'll guide you in that direction, especially if it comes down to like a weirder cab too, like something like a 612, where if you want an even impedance for the whole thing, we're going to be able to steer you in that direction. And most, you know, really everybody has been really, really excited about it, especially like the kind of stuff with the tone cults, kind of at that beginning when they started doing the Tone Cold series. Matter of fact, I think the 612 that Ian has some of the first Tone Cold speakers that they ever made. So they're not branded as Tone Cold as prior to them even having a name for them or whatever, but they're going, look, we see that there's a need that all guys, you know, and gals in the, you know, in this heavy music scene are tuning their guitars super low. They're running crazy high wattage amps through them. They, right. You know, they're just hitting it with all this distortion and fuzz and modulation. Like, we need some stuff that's road tested, that's burly, that's worthy of this kind of stuff. And so that's what they ended up doing was, you know, developing a speaker for heavy tunings and lots of fuzz and distortion and that kind of stuff.
And you're talking about Ian from The Well.
Ian, yeah, The Well. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about the construction on y'all's end of the cabinets themselves.
We use 13, 14 ply, voidless Baltic birch plywood. We'll do maple fronts. You have your choice of basically like any sort of hardwood front that you want. If that's like in a mirror, we've done walnut fronts. I even did some Padauk fronts, which are it's like this bright reddish wood, and the natural wood looks great. I've been wanting to do some Purple Heart stuff just to do it. And that's like a super dense wood we basically do that. And then we've been doing half blind dovetails now for a long while, just for the joinery part of it. And that's basically what we're doing. We're still just making them one at a time. Everything's like handmade from start to finish. We're not shipping anything out. I feel like that's it. I think I covered everything.
Well, one of the things that's really stuck out to me are also the finishes that y'all have.
Yeah, we've been getting. Well, I've been getting. Weirder and weirder with the. We've been just trying to do something different and different over time with being. Mainly, it's just like talking to customers and talking to people about like what do you want, and then do best match and just do something a little different like we just met, I made these purple Rickenbacker base cases for Parker from Windhand. He got his bases stolen in Houston, and then he got them recovered. And right before all this happened, so I made him the cases just really quick, so we get big transport back. And I based before, but we figured it out and. The cases were pounds, like they were, but we figured it out. And it came out pretty awesome, too. It looked good. Purple, so.
Very purple.
Oh, no, that's awesome. Though. Well, so if someone is coming in off the street and they want to come in and they're a lot of people are going to be coming in thinking to where it's like, well, I want, 412 or 415 or something, and thinking that it's almost like buying a Marshall cabinet, which I know it's not, I mean, this is totally custom made. It's low runs. You're doing them one at a time, what can they expect when they're approaching y'all and wanting a product?
Well, I think the way we start right now, is folks will just email us. They'll tell us what they are looking for as far as just a speaker layout, like 412 or 212, that kind of thing. And then basically we ask them, all right, what are you looking for in speakers? What are you looking for as far as impedance goes? What amps are you going to be running through it? And then kind of go from there. And then if folks, which a lot of folks aren't necessarily, and I was the same way until we started getting into this game. I hadn't swapped out speakers and cabs. I just had beater used cabs, whatever I could afford, and I had done a few speaker swaps, but I hadn't really delved deep into what is what as far as that kind of stuff goes. It was really just like finding a buddy to help me swap them out and something that I could afford at the time speaker wise. So this, we're able to go, okay, so what have you played? You know, if they're unsure about maybe what sound they're looking for, we go, okay, what kind of style of music are you playing? Is there something that you know that you've a cab that you've played that you really, really liked? And kind of start doing a little bit of research there. And honestly, we've even said, you know, for some folks on a budget or whatever, and they're looking to upgrade their sound, we've even said, hey, stick with the cab that you have and get better speakers, because that's a big part of it. And we'll be honest, we're cab makers, but we're going to tell you to get better speakers if it's a budget thing. And, you know, I feel like we kind of take that honesty approach, same as like Weber would do, and giving that feedback. And we've had some of those folks go, okay, cool, I'll start with speakers. We'll say, hey, this is the most expensive component of the cabinet itself.
Right.
Speakers in your cab right now, you know, 6 months down the line, a year from now, get a little extra cash together, we'll build you the cab that you want and swap the speakers out. And so we've done that with folks. But that's kind of how we start the process, is we go, you know, what kind of impedance you want, and then go from there. If they're not particular about a size or a layout or something, then we have standard sizes that we will build, 212s, 412s, that kind of stuff. And if somebody's not particular about that, then that's what we'll do with that. Now, we have had requests for, like, I want a 412, but I want it this perfect size because I want it to match up symmetry, you know, like with because the head that's going on it is a little bit shorter than the other. Gotta have it, you know, match up
perfect.
So we get it. We totally understand. If it's doable, we'll do it for you.
Right. I think the process is mainly just trying to be collaborative about style and aesthetic and sound, really. Like we're making a bunch of basically like oversized, like Sun style, like staggered 412s that like just look good. Like, and they're just, yeah. Like, and it's just an unusual, atypical setup.
Yeah, and then basically the big part of it, say that somebody wants a 412, what impedance you want, what speakers you're looking for, you have your choice of finish, color, and grill cloth, and from there. And then that's how in the direction of what they end up getting custom-wise. And we've definitely had times where we go, with our experience, if you're looking for this specific grill cloth, it's hard to work with, or it's not super durable. It looks a little similar. It looked really good. We'd recommend you go with this. And, you know, we've done that kind of thing, and we kind of see it. We have a lot of friends that do tattoos, and we've been tattooed, and I think that's like a really good way to go. I've been at tattoo shops or in the chair getting tattooed where people are like, I had an idea that I thought was awesome, and the artist goes, I'm going to tell you why this would be better. Yeah. And go, okay, I'll leave it up to you.
Yeah.
I get, you know.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent approach to it. And a refreshing one as well, you know, to where it's like, I think guitar and bass players are getting more sophisticated and understanding for sure that a tremendous amount of your tone is coming out of your speakers and also the quality of how the cabinet's built. And
for sure.
And people are wanting more of that. They're wanting more quality, and to be able to customize even on the small scale of what color do you want it in. It's a nice feature to provide along with some honesty, which is refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. Like I said, we didn't have nice gear until we started doing this stuff. I mean, you know, and we're gear obsessed, but we were not you know, the type of guys that had a ton of stuff to begin with, and just over the years through trading, like everybody does, selling stuff, have we gotten, you know, the stuff that we have now?
Yeah.
And we're still always questing, you know, we call it lurking, like tone lurking, you know, that's sort of our guy, you know, it's like our tone lurker, you know.
Very cool. Well, so we've talked about the cabinets, we've talked about, you know, the quality of them, and customer service on y'all's end and everything, and we've touched a little bit on music. You know, we have name dropped, you know, Motorhead and High on Fire, and you said Went Hand earlier. You know, I'm a fan of all three of those bands and stuff. What gets both of y'all up in the morning, you know, to where it's like, even if you're bummed, that's one of the things that Motorhead has become for me, to where it's just like, man, I can play that any time of the day. I don't care what's going on. If I'm bummed, if I'm jazzed, you know, if I'm driving 90 miles an hour, or if I'm just wanting to chill, like, I can put that on and listen to it. But what gets y'all's blood going to where you're jazzed about doing what you're doing and to keep moving forward?
I'll give you three that I got going right now.
Cool.
I'm originally from the Pacific Northwest, and Tad Doyle's like a big deal for me, like the band Tad. So I've been listening to God's Balls like a lot, and Salt Lick and all those records. Jason got me into Dead and Gone. I've been listening to that lately. I've been waking up at early, just getting over here. And Choir Boy and probably Floor, and those four are just kind of wide range. When we hit 100 cabs, I sent a 410 to Tad to his studio in Seattle, which was rad. We just made it and then sent it to him, and that was just a cool experience, I guess. And we got to meet him like Southwest Terrorfest when Brothers of Sonic Cloth played. I've been listening to that band a lot lately too. That they disbanded, but still great. What have you been listening to, Jason?
Oh, so just right before this Zoom interview, I was going through some the Archgoat catalog. I like them. I was listening to them. Before that, I was listening to Bog Body, which is this bass and drums, just disgusting, filthy, noisy, doomy stuff. Raspberry Bulbs, the new record on Relapse, which is different than their old stuff, and I was a really big fan of their old stuff. The Dead and Gone just put on Bandcamp, because I, like Dylan was saying, I'm obsessed with Dead and Gone, and they've been one of my top five favorite bands for a long, long time. And some stuff on Bandcamp last year that I had never heard. So, you know, like my recordings and stuff like that. So I was going through that kind of stuff. As far as me getting up in the morning, man, this guy, Dylan, is like a huge inspiration. I'm the type of personality that if I can't see something through to its most perfected point, I will start something and just never finish it. And you can ask him about it. But like one of the most motivated people I know, and just is like, I don't know when he sleeps. You know what I mean? He just freaking is at work or at the shop or cranking it out at band practice, like at all times. So, you know, he's been a big part of what has kept Worshiper going. I mean, he's the one that started it and has put the most time and effort into the whole thing. and has been the most motivating force out of the whole thing. The other thing that's, I think, motivated both of us, I don't want to speak for Dylan, but I feel pretty confident that he'd agree, is that honestly just the relationships that we've made with and the friends that we've made along the way and the knowledge that we've gained. Our buddy Steve Kolka from Destroyer of Light, you know, he introduced us to David Rogers and the two other folks that started Southwest Terrorfest in Tucson. We ended up backlining them a long time ago, the year that Brothers of Sonic Cloth played with Sleep. And I think it was the third year of the festival.
Yeah, I think that was
the fourth year of the festival. Year. And from there, that's what expanded upon to Northwest Terrorfest. It was part of the reason that Austin Terrorfest even got started. So all that kind of stuff, those experiences of just traveling, meeting folks, hearing other experts, you know, gear nerds, that kind of thing, that has really, really inspired us. You know, meeting pedal builders, meeting amp folks, anything like that, or just other musicians that talk about what they like and what they don't like about their gear. That's something that Dylan and I never get tired of talking about. You know what I mean? We're the dudes that punish you after your set when you're all sweaty. We're like, oh, what pedal do you have there? You know what I mean? Like, that's fucking me 100%. You know what I mean? We're like,
yeah.
Did you get that one pedal from that one guy? And, you know, like, it just never gets old. It's just an extension of our nerdiness when it comes to, like, just loving the music, right? It extends in all aspects of the artwork or the recording, the gear being used. All of that is just, like, infinite, you know, space to travel in as far as nerddom goes, you know?
Right, and wait, I don't know, like, through all those experiences we got to do, I don't know, I can't believe we got to do it all still. Like we got to go geek out with Lori from Acid King just about rigs and stuff. Like, just like, how do you get that sound? Like, she's like, I just like this pedal and I've been playing it with it forever. And that's it. I don't know, like. But yeah, like, and then I guess I started doing the drum thing to kind of just, again, try and do something different. That was a lot, I don't know. The making circles is a lot harder than making squares, I'll tell you that. but yeah, I don't know. Like, everything's kind of gotten, it's just, like, it's, Jason's right, it's like a just a big nerdy freak out, and like, it keeps building on it, and that's what gets me back in the shop all the time, making more stuff, just because it's a new conversation starter, it's a way for us to be creative, it motivates me to keep playing music, it just, everything kind of feeds itself. And I drive this guy crazy just because I got 12 different projects I'm doing at any one time, and I got to rein it in and get, you know, get a little bit more organized.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it's tough stuff. I mean, we still have a pretty austere shop, because the tools that we require to build cabs, it's really pretty minimal setup. And so our wood shop does not look like other people's wood shop. I mean, it's small. It's because this is still something that we're doing on the evenings and the weekends when we're not at our day jobs. And so we have a pretty austere setup. You know, it isn't always 100% fun, because It's sweaty, mosquitoes, you know, dusty, dirty. This guy's leaving tools everywhere and driving nuts, you know, that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, that's the kind of stuff that makes it worth it is being able to, like, travel and go to shows and that kind of stuff. And, you know, especially considering what's going on now, it's like, oh, yeah, don't take that for granted.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's really cool and really inspiring to talk to both of y'all. You know, and these talks are also meant for the younger generation too, to hear, to where it's like, it's like all of us that are in the scene are somewhat fans of each other and enjoy nerding out and talking about music and gear and all this, and also have a really strong work ethic. You know, I mean, it's like any of us that are working in the industry at any capacity, you got to have a good work ethic and to keep moving forward and get motivated about something. Not to say that, you know, you're not going to have an off day or just want to say fuck the world or whatever. You know, I mean, it's like there are some days where it's like, yeah, it's not happening. And at the same time, it's like it's all about picking yourself up and keep moving forward and doing what you love and being able to not only play music and also build cabinets and drums for other bands and musicians and stuff. And, you know, right now you got a day job, and hopefully pretty soon the cabinet making will take off, and then all of a sudden that's all y'all have to worry about.
Yeah, I hope so, for sure.
Yeah.
And to that point, man, like, that's really kind of how we got going on this whole thing was community. Like, it became kind of this community endeavor where we just want to support our friends. We want to make, you know, our buddies sound good. Like, you know, I'd rather make a 4x12 for a buddy of mine, right? And that, rather than charge like an arm and a leg to a guy that's never going to play out with it, never going to tour with it, never going to do any, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'd rather like make something for somebody that's going to play it and love it rather than buy it and sit and look at it, I guess.
Yeah. Rather than it be something that you set a beer on top of.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So, although it's okay if you do that, you know, as long as, you know.
That's a part of it.
Yeah, right. It's on stage or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
you can use extra.
It's on stage while it's vibrating your guts.
That's right. I mean, so many times Dylan will check in with me and go, hey, you still down to do this? Like, you still into this? I'm like, yeah. And, you know, I've answered honestly every time. It's like, because there are some times that you got to trudge through it. You're like, ah, oh, man, we got this thing, you know, money's tight or whatever else, or we've got, you know, a series of equipment problems with tools or whatever, you know, frustrating setbacks, or our handle supplier is now getting slapped with tariffs or whatever else, you know, that kind of thing, these, you know, aluminum tariffs or whatever. So it's like we get hit with those little setbacks all the time, but at the end of the day, when we go to a festival or something, and the festivals are ironically some of the harder parts of the job, they're the most rewarding at times, but it's like those are long days. We're there because we want to be supportive of the people on stage. We want to, you know, we want the guys on stage to feel awesome about what they're doing, and so they could put on a killer show and for the audience. And though that can be really, really stressful, because, you know, we're not necessarily there in a capacity to just chill and enjoy it. But at the end of the day, it feels really, really good once they get off stage and give us, you know, feedback and go, oh, wow, that was, wait, you made that? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And And it's like, that's where it's
all worth it.
Yeah, I mean, that's happened with us when we met. I mean, that was kind of like one of the things, because that was one of the first big festivals we did. And Tad and Peggy were using our stuff. And yeah, it's like, after they get off stage and they go, oh, you guys built this. Like, man, that's killer. And I'm like, oh, right. That, you know, that felt really, really good.